Namaste. Welcome to this first Q&A session for the Dissolving the Ego course. Just before we get going, I just have a couple of quick announcements that are important to go through. So I'm going to try my best to remember all of these. Should have written them down. But the first one is just a quick reminder of the time change this weekend in the US clocks. It won't affect anyone unless they're in the US, this one. If you are in the US, then the Sunday class and classes later on will be at a different time for you, just to double check that. The second one is that we're asking for if anyone wants to host study groups. So we have a couple of sanghas on anyway for the Dissolving the Ego course, but we want to get some informal study groups going where just a couple of you get together on Zoom. And I'd like, if possible, to have a whole host of these going at different times that suit different time zones as well. And this is just for the duration of the course. It's a great way to make friends if you want fancy hosting one. And it's really literally just opening the Zoom and then talking about the lesson, this week's particular lesson, sharing about it. Everyone else shares about it. If you have any challenges, you can go through that. It's very informal. If you're interested in doing that just for the duration of the course, then please email us at evolutionofspirit@gmail.com, the main email address. And we'll provide the Zoom and everything like that. It just needs to be a time that suits you, helps you as well assimilate the lesson deeper if you are helping others too. I know that firsthand. So, and the third one is just a quick reminder about, we're doing this Q&A session here now from things that were sent in. We'll read in a minute what's been sent in. And I just want to remind you that it has to be in 24 hours before the session in order to give us time to organize. I've had some come in later. We've had some come in later. And they won't be discarded. They will roll over into next week. So a week today, we do another Q&A, but at 7 p.m. UK. It alternates around satsang. So anything that isn't read out today, we've got it, but it will go into next week's. So just so that you know, and we're asking for only one question per form, please, just to help me get through as many as possible. So we'll go through the stuff today that's been sent in, and I'll open it up to see if there's any questions on this session here today. Each week I have someone read the questions for me. Shirley today is going to read them for me because, thank you, Shirley, because I'm very slightly dyslexic and it's very hard work to read something on a screen and read it out loud. I find that quite challenging to do. So we finally figured that out. And I'm going to hand it over to the lovely Shirley, my lovely assistant Shirley, whenever you are ready. Thank you.
Thanks, Helen. Okay, the first question is, I would like to hear from you about reincarnation. It's the only thing that ever made sense to me, but what do you think? And where do beings like ascended masters fit in, each with their own personality? If we are all one, no separation, why do people who have awakened continue, even beyond this lifetime, to have their own personalities and energies? If we're all one, how do we have the different lives and experiences that make us unique? Does this ever disappear? Are we stuck with this personality and character from now on, even if time doesn't really exist?
Can I just ask you to read that one more time for me? There's quite a lot in there. Thank you. I got most of it.
Okay, here goes. I would like to hear from you about reincarnation. It's the only thing that ever made sense to me, but what do you think? And where do beings like ascended masters fit in, each with their own personality? If we are all one, no separation, why do people who have awakened continue, even beyond this lifetime, to have their own personalities and energies? If we're all one, how do we have the different lives and experiences that make us unique? Does this ever disappear? Are we stuck with this personality and character from now on, even if time doesn't really exist?
Thank you. Thank you very much. So reincarnation, also for me, before I went on this non-dual path, it did seem to be the only thing that made sense also. It made sense to me that something was continuous and evolving about me. Something was changing and growing throughout each particular lifetime. And as I began to recognize that I'm not separate to anything, I began to question this too. Is there really such a thing as reincarnation anyway? And I get asked this very, very often because it doesn't, it's like, how does it fit in with what I'm seeing in this non-dual pathway? So really what we've got to look at is, first of all, what makes us unique and individual? Is that the same as separate, being a separate being? Can we be individual and unique and also individual and unique as an expression of that one being that really is here, the noumenon, the self, whatever we're calling that? And what relation does that have with the body? If the body is going to disappear, which it is, and there's no getting away from that fact, there must be something about us more subtle than the body, but more manifest than the pure, formless, infinite self. So something in between those two, excuse me, something in between those two that isn't completely unmanifest and isn't tangible and visible, something about us that is our individual uniqueness that continues. So there's no growth or evolution in the formless awareness. It just is. But then when it begins to take the shape of a human being, it doesn't just show up as a physical body and a mind. It shows up first as an individuality, a uniqueness. So if we take the analogy of the wave and the ocean, which I found helpful when I was looking at this myself, what makes us unique and individual is that surging, that rising of a wave. The wave is different to every other wave on the ocean surface. Each wave is individual and unique and will never be repeated ever. If you can extend the analogy a little bit to a wave that never subsides, it arises and never subsides, but it is not separate to or different from the water or the ocean. So the word wave and the word ocean, here the ocean representing the pure unmanifest self, are really synonyms. Wave cannot exist without the ocean. Ocean cannot exist without the wave. So this individual, unique, energetic, vibrational body, we could say, arises as a shape out of the shapeless first. And that's really what is growing and evolving throughout different lifetimes, although that is continuous. So you are the ocean and you are this wave eternally also. And then on the crest of this wave sometimes is the right as the wave is cresting, you can see the foam, the bubbles, the white on top of the blue water. That's the physical body. That's the outermost tip of our manifestation, the most dense, slow vibration, not bad or wrong, just dense as in heavier, slower vibration, so that we can perceive that with our physical senses then. So the crest of the wave, the smallest part of what we are, the body is what's coming and going, but the rest of the wave remains along with the ocean. So something is there and continuously unfolding and evolving. And there's a reincarnation. So there's one individual being, there's one being showing up as infinite individuals, I should say. And each individual expression is having repeated seeming incarnations, different bodies coming and going. So what's been reincarnated is really the idea of a separate being that's coming and going with the body, because it's an idea that I am a separate being. So at all times, you're not just the formless infinite self, you are also this unique expression that's always here and learning and growing. And if that wasn't so, then all this work we're doing in this lifetime to wake up to the truth and live as this would just die with the body. If there was nothing in between the body and the infinite formless awareness, all of this that we're learning from the Course would die with the body, and we'd have to start all over again next lifetime. And I don't know about you, but I've pretty much done with that process. I've just kind of figured out this life and reality thing. I'd like to experience it without the illusion. So to continue to experience it. So something is retaining and remembering on an energetic level what makes you individual. It might help to realize that manifestation is not really solid things. We're going to look at this in lesson four. It's all a vibration. Everything that you perceive and experience is vibration. It's your brain that says, gives it a name to go with that particular vibration. But a vibration is a wave, and a wave never ends. It just gets to a certain point and changes to a different frequency. And we call that a different manifestation of a different object. It's really the one infinite vibration that the universe is appearing as. So we can have a different oscillation in a certain place at the same frequency, and we call that an individual expression of the one being. So we all have our own uniqueness and specialness and things that we're really good at, things that we're not so good at, and we get to keep that. We call it our personality. We can call our individuality. I'm a word nerd, so, you know, individual is the Latin for indivisible dual. So indivisible two is really what you are appearing as, divided. If you don't like etymology, no, don't worry about it, but the clue is there in the word individual. It doesn't mean separate. It means indivisible appearing as two, indivisible one appearing as two, or many, or billions, or infinite. So yes, you are kind of stuck with this. But if I look back at myself 10 years ago, this personality, I mean, my personality is very different. A lot of the things that I didn't like about it have disappeared. A lot of the things I would like to enhance and get more of have happened. But recognizing that that's how manifestation moves. It's a vibration. You as an individual are a vibration, and you're always evolving. Your overall frequency in the mind and body is always increasing, and in this energetic body, which is why you come into this lifetime with skills that you've learned in previous bodies. So bodies are coming and going, but this continuous individuality that is you is going to be evolving forever. So even if we get to a place where we can no longer inhabit this planet, that's still not the end of you as an individual. You will continue. You don't need a physical form to evolve. It's just faster that way because you have the seeming opposites. So as you really sort of, this is a different way of thinking, as you really begin to sort of ponder this, you'll see that the more I see everything is the infinite formless awareness, the noumenon, the self, the more my individuality is allowed to reflect that and shine as that, and it blossoms through me more and more. And this is what you see as an awakened being, that there is very little impeding that expression of the truth. Very few ideas, if any, remaining that are impeding the, if you had a really bright light bulb, and you covered it with a black marker and, you know, all over it, there'd be very little light able to shine through that bulb, through the glass. If you clean that glass off and release all these ideas, you're going to get very bright expression. And if you call them angels or guides or ascended masters or awakened beings, there, it's really all the same thing we're talking about, at least in my own perspective, which is simply a being that no longer needs to have a physical incarnation in order to realize the truth. That doesn't mean that they're not going to. They might do that to help others. They might do that to have some fun. There is a place when suffering has stopped where this incarnation is a whole lot of fun. even with its highs and lows as a human being. So those individual waves are never lost, ever. They're always there. And we know this instinctively. If ever we desperately need help, I found in the greatest, darkest times of my awakening, when I asked for help, I didn't know who I was asking, but it always came. It was always a sense that I was never alone in the individuality. There's always some higher vibrational being that was there to help. And we call that an awakened being, or whatever label we're giving to that. Just like right now, this body here is not doing the teaching. Nothing will be lost when this body goes. No functionality, no ability to help others is going to be lost in that. It's just we all think when we look at a particular body, we're talking to that particular being. It's only the visible part of them that goes. So there's a lot in that question. So hopefully I've covered most of it, and have a ponder. And if you want a little clearer explanation or to zoom in on a particular bit, then please do feel free to ask again. Thanks, Shirley.
Hello, thank you so much for the first lesson. My question is as follows. I often have a strong fear that arises, along with at times irrational thought. When this happens, do I stay with the feeling that is arising? At the same time, do I turn my attention away from the thought back to awareness stroke being whilst allowing the feeling? Is there any self-inquiry I would do at this point? The intense fear has blocked me from moving forward for many years and stems from PTSD. Thank you and namaste.
Well, you said it brilliantly there in your question, which was, you said something like, turn back to the awareness and in doing so, allow the emotion. So if I'm remembering correctly, so it, as I feel a strong emotion, no matter how strong that emotion is, whether straight away or later, some point later, I'm going to be able to make that choice to turn back to the awareness, to bring attention back to awareness or the self by whichever name, whichever of the doorways we're using. And even if you can't do that immediately, if the emotion is so palpably strong, it's okay. At some point, you will kind of regain some kind of conscious choice, as we were talking about. I can go back to the awareness and noticing that which is aware of this sensation and the fear, when we can automatically allow, finally, maybe for the first time, just allow the emotion. Because the self, the awareness, is no, it doesn't have any ability to control or manipulate. It just is that empty intelligence, sentience, in which the body and the emotion is arising, and it has no capacity to grab or push away. It can't do either of those. It cannot push against the fear. It also cannot grab a hold onto peace or bliss or anything like that. It just is. So in that, as we were saying, I think in the first lesson, that's really a form of deep, deep love, just totally allowing the emotion to whatever extent we can, is being the self there. And we'll talk about this in a much more detailed way on Sunday, but any strong emotion is coming from a thought that we haven't examined yet. And post-traumatic stress disorder, the word trauma is inherent in something that was just so scary at the time that it couldn't be processed. So it's been processed after. And there is never a better time to process it than when you start to realize that you're timeless, deathless, changeless, formless, all of that. Then we can finally address these powerful emotions that seemed very, very true as a separate being. If I believe I'm a separate being, then I am going to die. I am going to cease to exist at some point, and that can happen without my consent. And even if I believe I'm not the body, but I am this individual, this separate energetic being, still my experience of life is still dependent very much on the body, and I will feel very diminished when the body goes. So fear is the outcome of feeling very, very unsafe, or feeling that we're not safe, we're in danger. And this thought is so pervasive in our consciousness that we don't even consciously, we only pay attention to thoughts that seem new or different. We believe for so long that we're unsafe as a separate being that we are not even aware of that thought running through our system, except for the way it makes us feel. So bringing attention to the awareness as much as possible, and we'll look at this in more detail on Sunday, but actually looking at this fear best you can, and it's okay if you can't look at it for more than 10 seconds or 30 seconds. And then when I used to do this, I'd sit with this fear, I'd manage 10 minutes next time, and then a couple of hours. And eventually I was really able to ask this fear, what does it want to tell me? What does it believe is true? Because if the fear, any emotion is a biological response to a neurochemical. So if I feel that I'm not safe and I could cease to exist at any time, that's going to put a stress, adrenaline through my system. And most of us are functioning on this fight or flight mechanism. And we have been our entire life to some degree. And at moments, this is very noticeable, isn't it? Very tangible. It's a very visceral experience. And we can tell, this is why we have a body, we can tell how much we're believing that thought still, that I'm not safe, I'm in danger. One of my very first memories is fear, and it was with me forever until it wasn't, until I'd really deeply looked at this. Is it really true I'm not safe? And I can't expect the emotion to completely disappear while the thought, the seed, is still generating the emotion. We can't just stop believing this idea. You can't just unbelieve a thought. There's no magic way to just stop believing it, but you can do the opposite of belief, which is questioning if it's actually true. Yes, I might be feeling that way right now. Yes, I might be experiencing that in my life right now. But I can still, at the same time, question, is this really true? And again, I'll mention this more on Sunday, how to unravel all this, but on my YouTube channel, there is a core teachings playlist, and there's a contemplation video which goes along with lesson two that will help how to ask, how to challenge these thoughts, what contemplation is, the stages of the answers that we go through. All we need to do is to consistently challenge the idea behind the thought. So in fear here, you can see this idea that I'm not safe, you know, something, I might die, I might cease to exist. If we're struggling with anger, we can kind of get a sense of feeling blocked, limited, not being able to get what we want. If we could ask anger what it wanted to tell us, if it had a mouth, that's kind of what it would say, something along those lines. I'm blocked, can't get what I want or need. If I was to ask guilt what it wanted to tell me, it would probably say I'm not good enough. I don't deserve to be happy. I don't deserve to wake up. And you can go through each emotion, and I did this, and asked it what it was, what was the idea underneath it, some idea. This idea is so deeply held that we're not even aware of it. We're only aware of that we must be believing it because we're living the emotion and we're feeling the, we're experiencing the effect of it in our life as our reflection in our outer life. So just, and you don't have to do this when the fear is even happening. You can just sit with a cup of tea in a calmer moment and say, what does fear want to tell me? And is that true for me now? Is that true for me now? It's very true. It feels extraordinarily true as a separate being. But what about now, as I'm starting to see what I really am? And this is why it's coming up now. Because this idea that I am not safe is no longer or less and less in alignment with what you've seen yourself to be or are seeing yourself to be. Just because you might not have had a huge epiphany doesn't mean that your identity isn't already shifting to recognizing that you are the infinite self, that you're not actually separate to anything. You don't need to have a big epiphany for that to be occurring. The very fact you're even attracted to a course like this means you really are already started to see and just want help to kind of work out the kinks and the bugs in that process, that you're not separate to anything or anyone, and that you are infinite and all-pervading and all of that. So just taking a pen and paper and in a quiet moment, questioning what does this want to tell me, and then just turning that into a question, the I statement, I'm not safe. Is it true I'm not safe? Had to do this myself. Fear was my fairly constant companion, wanted or not wanted, but guilt, anger, despair, had to look at a couple of them. Everything, you know, unworthiness that we all tend to deal with as a human being. So I hope that helps for now. And we will dig into it more on Sunday. Thanks.
Dear Helen, sometimes when I shift my attention on the awareness, I find myself looking for a location. In that process of looking, locations seem to appear with inside and outside labels, paired with a little bit of a confusion about the inside reference point and the knowledge that I am everywhere and that the seeking itself is, as a form, part of me, and that I will not find anything else than forms. So, do you have any advice for the part of me that is confused with its location? With love.
Okay, so there is still a part of me right now that still feels it has a location. So location, by location I mean I know where I am. There's still something about me even now that still feels localized and finite, not so limited anymore, but and the that part of me, I always expected that part of me would disappear upon self-realization, or perhaps clearer said, my egoic sense of self, this more fluid personality thing that we were talking about on our first lesson on Sunday, is and still feels like it's only happening here. So I'm going to try and say the same thing I've just said two ways in a third way, which might be hopefully even clearer. Right now, I still feel, have a sense of, I'm sat here talking to you and you're all somewhere else, you know, so there's still a sense of separateness. And that isn't a mistake. It's just been seen through clearly that that sense of me being a someone, that there is a someone here, is something that's artificially generated by the presence of thoughts, emotions, experiencing, sense perception going on. In short, while there's a body here, there will seem to be someone living in it. And that doesn't trouble me anymore, because I know that the sense of separateness is not really an actual thing. It's just a sense. It's an illusion that seems to be real while the body's here. If I, for a moment, imagine my body disappeared, there'd be no sense perception, there'd be no thoughts, no emotions, no experiencing. Where could I reference my location then? Where could I say that I am then? I'm here, but I don't have any physical location to say, to point to in a map and go, that's where I am. I'm definitely here, but I can't point to a thought or an emotion or a body or an experience to say, that's where I am. I can't mark X on the map and say, that's where my location is. So simultaneously, I know that I don't have a location, or I'm located everywhere. That I don't have, I don't have any, or I'm looking through every set of eyes. I know that I'm infinite. I know that there's no way ever to find out where I am. And I also feel like I'm here talking to you. And those are not contradictory. They are beautifully contrasting. They are beautifully synchronous. They are wonderfully uniquely interacting with each other. So I can feel like someone and know that I'm everywhere with a deep and powerful knowing. And I can even enjoy feeling like I'm someone somewhere when I know it's not true. This is a very long way around of saying some part of you will always feel it has a location. But once you've proved to yourself that that's not true enough times, it won't be something that you feel you have to get rid of. It's not an accident or a mistake of consciousness that we feel we have this sense of separateness. It's actually there as an expression of that uniqueness that we were talking about, a physical, mental, and emotional expression of that unique wave. So first, what is you uniquely appears as energy, and then it appears as a body and thoughts and emotions in a continuing expression. And we only suffer when we think that that is all we are, or that sense of separateness is an actual thing. So can you feel like someone and know that you're everywhere? Can you begin to rest more in that? Why do we need to, and I get it because I completely had this sense too, that if I still felt like a someone, that I had to get rid of that, that my awakening wasn't deepened. But actually, it's a total embracing of every way that you can show up, every way. You are the infinite formless reality. You are the only thing that exists. And you're also showing up as this human being that appears to be moving through time and space, that appears to be learning and growing and evolving. So you get to taste both. You get to taste what it's like to be an individual with a sense of time and change and all of that. The joy of an individual realization, feeling like you're getting it here. You're really getting it. You're really getting somewhere. But just holding that sense loosely in that you are also everywhere, you're not limited. And when this body goes, you're not gone. That you are still experiencing yourself as all of this. And that's a knowing that deepens in the background, a conviction that becomes absolute. I am everywhere, because awareness doesn't have a location. It may feel like it's located in our head. If we really try to look at what awareness is, we'll find that it's not a thing. It's not something I can say is here or over there. It doesn't have a location. It doesn't have any edges. It's more like the space in the room, isn't it, than a thing. A thing has a location. I know where my hand is. I know where this laptop is. I'm using this to do this. Where is the awareness, actually? Is it something I can point to, like my body, and say, that's where it is? And perhaps more importantly, that's where it isn't. It isn't over there. It's only somewhere around here. So not trying to get rid of any part of your experience, just seeing through this one idea that this sense of someone is actually a real thing that was made, created, and is going to disappear at the end, or that you really actually are separate. So if you ask me, do you have a location? I'd have to say yes and no. Or probably more truthfully, I'd say I don't have a clue. I can't answer that question. Am I everywhere or somewhere? Yes. There's no answer that's going to satisfy the mind. I'm absolutely everywhere. I've proved that to myself. I also experience myself as someone somewhere, and that's beautiful. And we only suffer when we try to find out which one of those is more true. But you are the infinite allness that's everywhere, showing up as someone somewhere. How could we exclude either one of those without losing something, without feeling diminished and separate, divided rather? I hope that helps. Thanks, Shirley.
Okay, question 4. I have tinnitus, and the more I try to listen to the silence, the louder it gets. Usually I don't pay much attention to the ringing, so it doesn't seem as loud. Your take? Also, while I am meditating using one of the two doors, I find myself thinking words that relate, like, I am here, I am now, I am always. Is the ultimate goal to experience the noumenon without words?
Let me take the second bit first. I might ask you to read the first bit again in a minute. The second bit, yes, the ultimate goal is to experience the noumenon without words, and you're already doing that. It's not something that new that's going to come into your experience. So if I find that a particular thought is helpful to get me started, and we did this with the awareness, so being aware of awareness, we pose the question, am I aware? So that's really just a thought, isn't it, that I'm using to point me back to that place before words, before thoughts. Because in that sentence, am I aware, there's then a looking and a checking and a recognizing of awareness being present. And that isn't a thought process. It isn't words. It isn't anything at all in manifestation. So yes, but don't think you have to go, as soon as you say that thought, I am aware, or whatever I'm paraphrasing what you put in there. You can only hear that thought because awareness is already there. Formless, wordless awareness that's noticing, that's watching, that's listening. So it's never one or the other. The ultimate goal, yes, but you're already doing that. This is, took me a while to get my head around this because I thought that I had to get rid of the words and the thoughts. And then I realized, but I wouldn't know that that kind of helpful mantra thing is happening unless awareness was hearing it. Isn't it the formless, wordless awareness that's hearing that anyway? It's always going to be both. It's always going to be both. And without the words and the forms, we would find it very hard to recognize, by contrast, the formless and wordless awareness. So as an example, I would be sitting listening to silence, a couple of seconds just listening to silence. Their mind would say, oh, I'm getting this, I'm listening to silence. This is really good. This is what silence is. And it would start talking about silence. So I'd try to stop those thoughts and go back to the silence, or even hope that they would stop if I just listened to the silence again. But I realize it's always going to be both. I'm listening to the silence and mind is talking about the silence at the same time. In fact, I couldn't hear what mind was saying without the silent listening that I am. I couldn't know that my mind is thinking without the thoughtless awareness being able to see that. And it doesn't matter if I'm aware of awareness or I'm aware of thoughts, same awareness. One way it's looking at an object of a thought, the other way it's looking at its diffuse subjectivity. So I hope that helps with the second bit. The idea that you have to choose one or the other is what will trip you up here. And the presence of that thought that helps you segue into the awareness, that thought, that segue thought is heard in the awareness. It's arising in the awareness already. So I can't see my hand without the awareness that's perceiving. They cannot be separate. They must be present together. Could you just read the first part for me again? Thanks.
The first part is, I have tinnitus, and the more I try to listen to the silence, the louder it gets. Usually I don't pay much attention to the ringing, so it doesn't seem as loud. Your take.
Okay, so here is where we can see the subtle nature of phenomena. So this happens many times when people begin to listen to the silence, for example. Quite often we get questions. I'm hearing a ringing in my ears. And of course you may have had that anyway with tinnitus, but some people say, I feel a buzzing in my body, or I feel a kind of energy that's coming. And is that the silence? And if it is not permanent, if it's not there all the time, then it's not the noumenon, it's not the silence. So this ringing in the ears might be there all the time in the waking state, but it's not possible to experience it in deep sleep or even in the dream state. So distill a phenomenon. In fact, the waking state itself is a phenomenon, isn't it? It's coming and going. And when we put any attention on anything at all, it begins to become very big in our experience. As I'm sure you've noticed with negative emotions, you begin to pay attention to it. You begin to resist it even a little bit. It really kind of balloons in your experience, becomes very prominent. So anything that we are giving any relevance to also is going to, any meaning is going to get bigger in our experience. So just noticing that sound and allowing it to point you back to what's hearing it. And it will begin to diminish. And it could be that if you struggle with tinnitus, that maybe listening to silence isn't the best way for you. Maybe if it becomes too loud, then try a different doorway. But 99 times out of 100, it begins to diminish when we stop giving it relevance. Any phenomenon at all, whether it's something out there, something in here, something going on in the senses, any emotion, any sensation can be used to point you back to the noumenon that's experiencing it, the pure experiencing. So I would treat it like any other phenomena, just like a thought or an emotion. This sound is just a sound, and give it no more relevance than that. But again, if it's getting to the point where it's challenging to do the meditation, then maybe choose another doorway. Usually it fades away when we stop giving it sort of, when we stop saying that it has an importance or a meaning or something like that, or that we're doing something wrong. Usually that's the meaning we give to it. So I hope that's helpful. Thanks, Shirley.
Okay, so the last question, which is not a question, it's entitled Meditation Musing. There is just seeing, and there is no one seeing. Feeling just happens. I can't find the looker is just a thought. There are feelings of discomfort to try to find the looker that can't be found, and no one to feel the discomfort. What really exists? What is existence? What is real? Something exists to ask these questions. Underneath, there must be peace, but it's cloudy today. And at the same time, it's clear this is more real.
Sounds like a very deep meditation was going on there. Very turbulent. And it's often the way it was for myself, that those most stormy of meditations came to, inquiry sessions came to, the deepest seeing. And again, even if it's cloudy right now, you're only aware of that feeling because awareness is there, or you're only able to hear the noise of the confusion of the mind because the silence is already listening as you. Silence, if you think about listening or paying attention, let's look at listening. I don't know why I'm saying this. It must be something you need to hear or someone needs to hear, but listening is silent in its very nature, isn't it? Could you actually hear anything if you were making noise yourself? Mustn't you be really, really, really quiet in order to listen? And we could say paying attention to something is also the same. The paying attention has this kind of, it's empty, isn't it? It's empty of a someone. There's just attention going to this phenomenon with no volitional action behind that. There's just this empty paying of attention, meaning by empty, I mean there isn't someone doing it. So listening is just happening. Paying attention is just happening. Experiencing is happening with no experiencer. There's no entity, separate entity that is coordinating all of this going on. There's nobody that wrote that comment. It is the self appearing as this wave that's writing the comment and experiencing that cloudiness. And those are the best contrasts, you know, where it really seems, where I really feel limited and separate, and where I'm really struggling is where I'm just about to break through the most. Those are the biggest seeing's biggest epiphany. They come from those. So seeing where that takes you, like see where that takes you and stay with that. It's got something to tell you, hasn't it? Something to give you. I get a sense of this, that you saw something in that that you're not really admitting to yourself, that you saw some kind of breakthrough or epiphany or something that you won't let yourself acknowledge. So just maybe having a look at that, seeing if there's something that you're not allowing yourself to recognize. Lovely. So thank you, Shirley, for reading those. Deeply appreciate it. Let's take a quick 5-minute break, and then we'll, if there's anybody answer questions even or sharings that want to happen here, we can do that. So we'll stop this recording for now.